Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, and I am your host, Tom Rafferty. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Rafferty from SAP, and with me on the show today, I have my guest, Philip. Philip, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. I'm one of the co-founders and managing directors of InstaFreight, which is a digital freight forwarding company. Now in this role for the past, almost 3.5 years, being based in Berlin. And by now with a team of a bit more than 100 people. Super happy to be on the show. So thanks a lot for inviting me.
Sure, not a problem. So to kind of set the levels on the show, typically I start this by asking people who come on, how do they define a digital supply chain, given that this is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast? So what's your definition of a digital supply chain, Philip?
Well, to me, it's basically, a supply chain obviously usually consists of several players, like in our case, in the freight forwarding space. And for me, a digital supply chain is something where you think a lot about end-to-end processes, where you involve several parties, as I said, and where every interaction step between those parties, or among those parties, is actually digital. And digital for me, and this is... this is always a funny one if you talk about the logistics industry. For me, digital is not necessarily an email or so, but it's actually sending data, connecting systems and sending data from one party to the other so that every party in that chain actually knows what is happening and can take proper decisions, knowing exactly how would this affect the next step, et cetera, which is not really possible in the old world, where you basically have defects in this supply chain, at least on the data level. And this is my understanding of a digital supply chain.
You mentioned that you're the co-founder of InstaFreight. So is InstaFreight a startup?
Really depends on how you define a startup. And yes, we were started 3.5 years back. But with startups, it oftentimes comes with, this is a set of people super young, not really knowing what they're doing, a bit of uncertainty in there, which I think we are out of this step by now. So as I said, we are a bit more than 100 people, and I think what differentiates us from the stereotype of a startup, I was just painting the picture, is that it's a super experienced team, and I'm not necessarily talking about myself being experienced. But I'm basically talking about the team working for us, right? And being InstaFreight at the end. So there's a big blend of people from just dropping out of university, super young, super energetic, want to learn and grow a lot. And then experts in certain fields, right? Let it be tech, for example. And then since we're working in logistics, obviously we have quite a few with long time experience logistics expert on board, which then complement the team. So yes, we are a startup in terms of tenure with 3.5 years, but we are, I would say, a super reliable partner to both our shippers, our customers, as well as our partners who actually do the job on the road. If that answers the question.
No. I've come across lots of startups that are 10 years old. For example, Rivian, the car company out of Detroit, started in 2009 and they call themselves a startup. So, you know, at 3.5, you're still very young as a startup. So just for people who are unaware, what do InstaFreight do?
Yeah, InstaFreight is a digital freight forwarder. And
what does that mean?
A digital freight forwarder means that you basically do everything a traditional freight forwarder does, meaning organizing transports. In our case, organizing transports overland, so road transports, with a strong focus on full truckloads. We do this in the European Union. Mm-hmm. And as a digital freight forwarder, what you basically do is, similar to your question on what is a digital supply chain, that every single step of how you being a shipper or how you being a carrier working with a freight forwarder is actually digital. So that starts from how you receive quotes to how you place orders, to how we as a company dispatch those orders internally, that we are actually, because of having the data and having the connectivity to our carriers, are actually capable of tracking these guys properly, tracking not like what they're doing, but at least tracking where they are, for example, on the road, and being actually capable of showing this live data to customers. And then all the way through, we have like currently, I think we are maybe the first company or among the first companies in the freight space who implemented or have a pilot at the moment on the digital proof of delivery. So even those documents, which are a big pain, to be honest, and still in the industry, I mean, it's just incredible how much paper gets pushed around in that industry, how much time and efficiency is basically wasted. So this is by now, at least in this pilot, already digital. And then all the way through through the whole settlement process, the whole thing is digital. And this is what clearly differentiates us from a traditional freight forwarder. This is what we're doing.
Interesting. And you say it differentiates you from a traditional freight forwarder because up until you guys came on the scene, everything was done by paper?
I wouldn't say everything, but there are quite a few steps in there, which, to be honest, are still super manual, right? Let's talk about the quotation. Like, I mean, if you, for example, this is how we started initially 3.5 years ago, if you try to get a quote from one of the traditional freight forwarders, you, let's say, visit their website, and what you find is a phone number or is an email address, and you basically start sending emails, sending emails to these guys or giving them a phone call asking for quotes. And if you say, okay, I want to go from, I don't know, like Munich to Barcelona, it can easily take you several hours, not even days sometimes, until you get a binding offer from a freight forwarder with a full commitment that he's going to drive this particular job for you from Munich to Barcelona. So we thought, honestly, like if you step into the shoes, and all of us, we are B2C customers at the end of the day, and our expectation is that you can actually order stuff online, that you get an immediate price, that you know when this stuff is going to arrive, well, in this case, when the stuff is going to be picked up. And we basically brought this into logistics, right? And what we've done is we developed a pricing algorithm that allows us to quote any type of shipment. I mean, starting from like full truckloads, as I said, down to single pallets, to basically provide the shipper or our customers an instant offer that is binding, and InstaFreight is the contractual party to the shipper, which was back then completely new to the market. And traditional freight forwarders, you basically haven't seen this before. Usually what you see is, if at all, that, yeah, we can send a request and they will come back to us, or this is a price indication, but we have to confirm first. Stuff like this you usually see. Mm-hmm. But a binding offer, you rarely see. And this is basically what we brought to the German market, or let it be even the European market. And that was back in 2016. By now, and this is, I think, super interesting to see with traditional freight forwarders, that the whole industry basically has a big challenge in actually having visibility in their own operations basically providing visibility to their customers. What I mean by this is, if today you work or you want to have stuff being shipped from A to B and you need a full truckload, right? I mean, typically what you do is you do a tender and try for the next 12 months or so, try to find trucking companies who basically operate certain trucks for you on certain trade lanes. The challenge is, if you then don't work directly with the carrier, and typically if you're a large shipper, you cannot really work directly with the carrier, simply because these guys, the guys really driving on the road, are just way too small. And they usually drive on one particular trade lane, or maybe two or three, but mostly they don't do every single trip, right? And this is basically why you have freight forwarders, because freight forwarders know, and they are sort of the clutch to the market, they know what carriers are driving where, right?
Okay.
In the traditional world, in the offline world, however, the challenge is this market is like super fragmented, right? You have in Europe, you have approximately 770,000 carrier companies with an average of 5 to 6 trucks. 5 to 7 trucks. So vastly fragmented market. So a traditional freight forwarder who knows, maybe, I don't know, let it be a 50, let it be 100, or let it be 500 carrier companies, they have a super limited view on this market, right? I mean, the largest player in our market has a market share of 2.7%. That's called DB Schenker. I mean, this is for the German market.
Yep.
Those guys simply don't know exactly which carriers are driving where. And what you and basically proving this point is, as I said, they work as a freight forwarder. They receive loads from the shipper and then trying to find the right carriers. What you oftentimes see is they give a load to a carrier, and at the same time, this carrier might not really be driving this, and they actually start giving this load to another carrier, which happens on freight exchanges. And on the leading freight exchanges out there, you see oftentimes every single day up to 350,000 entries in these freight exchanges. And this is like my definition, my proof that how this market organizes itself today is not very efficient, because those carriers then, as I said, start trading, which is not really their job, right? I mean, they should be driving.
Yep.
What effectively happens is basically two problems. One is you burn money, because with every single transaction, they basically take their own cut, right, and give it to someone else.
Sure.
And you oftentimes see up to 35% of the shipping price actually being wasted, if you want, right, or lost in this process, which is a big, where it's like big potential. The second thing is, and this is even worse when we talk about the digital supply chain, those transactions oftentimes happen, as I said, via email or phone call, right? I mean, those freight exchanges then connect two parties, they trade, and the first freight forwarder who received the load from the shipper does not know anymore who is driving and where is this guy. And this is also something that we've started solving by basically connecting the carriers onto a platform, like to the InstaFair platform. Uh-huh. And then basically understanding super precisely what carrier is that. So what type of equipment do they have? What type of licensees is that? What is their insurance? So we do like a proper vetting process. And also, and this is actually the most important thing, understanding where are these guys going, like really understanding their footprint, right? And what you can then do is super efficiently, super targeted, actually find the right carrier who is operating in a certain trade lane. And second, giving those loads to those carriers. And third, onboarding these guys, meaning having their telematic data and their telematic systems connected to us. So we know at every point in time who's driving and where is this truck. And this visibility and this data we can then show and give to our shippers.
Okay, so you know who's driving, where they're driving, and crucially, what they're driving.
Exactly. I mean, what they're driving, the shipper should know, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we have to know in like what category does that fall. Today, we do not know yet on a unit level what they're driving, but to be fair, this is one of the next logical steps, right? That you also carry this data if you want, right?
Yeah, sure.
At the moment, we can basically track it on a truck level, which is already like super far advanced of what you see out there.
We've had a couple of episodes of this show where we've talked about business networks. This sounds a bit like a business network. And these kind of networks, or platforms in this case, typically suffer from the chicken and egg problem. How do you solve that? Because any kind of network like this is only as valuable as the amount of players that are on it. So how do you solve for that?
That's a super interesting question. I mean, as you said, it's basically the challenge of every platform model out there, or marketplace model, platform model. For us, I mean, there are like two possible starting points, right? Like either you say, I'm going to start with the carrier trying to find loads for these carriers, or you say, I'm going to start with the shipper getting their loads and then trying to find carriers. For us, the second option was what we chose. So we basically approached shippers, got loads from them, and actually committed a price to these guys where we felt comfortable. And this is where this pricing algorithm came from. Okay. Where we felt comfortable that we actually are going to be able to find and source carriers, ideally for cheaper, And this is basically how we started, right? So we had the start of our business was in June 2016, on the 1st of June. On the 10th of June, we basically had the first transactions, which was like super rapid prototyping, being very much hands-on. So our minimal viable product, how you basically call it, was like, let's say, very basic. Mm-hmm. But it allowed us to basically start solving this chicken egg problem for us. So as I said, we got the first loads, and then basically using existing tools in the market, and at the end of the day, using even phone books to find carriers who then operate those who then operate basically those loads that we got in. As I said, super hands-on, 4 people on the table, so the 2 co-founders, like myself and my colleague, and 2 interns. This is basically how this all started. By now, we have on this 2-sided marketplace, if you want, we have a bit more than 2,000 shippers. And shippers can mean like a small, I mean, not maybe mom and pop shop, but like mid-sized companies. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Oftentimes, let it be retailers, let it be manufacturing companies. Doesn't really matter. And this goes up to companies like Unilever, Nestle, Amazon, and so on. So like really multinational corporates shipping with us. Tremendous volumes by now.
Wow.
And on the other side of the market, we have a bit more than 10,000 carrier companies. I mean, those guys I was mentioning earlier, operating trucks, usually mid-sized to small-sized carriers from all over Europe, who have either we have registered them or they've registered with us and went through this onboarding and are now basically receiving loads from us super targeted on a daily basis.
So that's where you've come in the last 3.5 years, let's call it. Where are you going in the next 3.5 to 5 years? What are the plans moving forward?
3.5, 5 years is a long time, right? Talking about a startup, which we both found out we still are. But yeah, I mean, like to be fair, how we steer the company is obviously a lot about the vision, and this is where like the 3 to 5 years comes into play. But in like the actual day-to-day business, it's more like, okay, what's going to happen next year? But let's talk about the next 5 years and like, where do we see the industry developing and what's our role in there?
Yeah.
To be fair, we see certain problems in this market that are quite obvious, right? I mean, like one challenge, it's not necessarily a problem, but one challenge or one fact is, as I said, the super high level of fragmentation in the market, especially on the carrier side. You do see some consolidation happening there. However, this market will not change completely over the next 5 years. The second challenge or fact you have is that the average age of a driver in Germany, or let it be Europe, is, if I remember correctly, 57, 56, 57, something like that.
Wow.
So you already have a significant lack of drivers in terms of numbers. And at the same time, you see these guys retiring very soon. So there is and will be a super strong need for finding alternatives how to basically transport stuff from A to B. And since we are not yet in the time where you can basically do this like over the air, if you want.
Drones,
yeah. Instead, yeah, exactly. But instead, you actually need trucks driving, right? I mean, it's basically the backbone of the industry. With that being said, there will be a strong driver for having autonomous trucking at some point or the other. I mean, to us, and this is not because we are a startup, but because I'm a strong believer in this, is the question, is autonomous trucking going to come? Yes or no? It's not a question of the if, but more of the when. I'm pretty sure that those legal barriers and also technical barriers will come down at some point. And then the question comes, okay, will an autonomous fleet receive the information of where to pick up stuff and where to drop off stuff, receive that by a piece of paper that is printed and then put on the, I don't know, like passenger sheet of the truck? Most likely no, right? So we are basically building this infrastructure that will, going forward, tell trucks where to go, where to pick up stuff, and basically have this network that allows you to operate a fleet like this. And I think this is one of the the visions behind what we're building, connecting those parties and being the platform for road trade in Europe.
Very cool. Very cool. Very cool. Philip, we're coming towards the 20-minute mark, which is typically the kind of stopping point for the podcast. And I always like to throw a bit of a curveball to people at this point by asking them, is there any question that I haven't asked you that you wish I did?
Well, typically what people, or let it be investors, ask you is, what are the biggest challenges that you face, right? Uh-huh. And if I want to give an answer to this, is at the moment, and this might be a big shout out to the Berlin community, we are urgently looking for an office because we've been growing so quickly that by now, I mean, honestly, it's like it really got very tight in our office. And wow. Like jokes aside, I think one of the biggest challenges at the moment is basically hiring and like getting the right people on board. We have a tremendous crowd, honestly, like super cool people, super experienced people with great knowledge. However, at the end of the day, what we have as assets is basically people, right? And finding the right people, retaining the right people, this is the biggest challenge, or like what I'm doing basically on a daily basis. And this is what we're currently working on, and this will for sure not change in the future. It might actually become even more focused on this. So that's I would say is our biggest challenge at the moment, managing the growth and at the same time getting in the right people.
It's a good problem to have, Philip, I guess. So that's great to hear. It's never good to have a problem, but at least if you have a problem that's showing that you're being successful, that's good.
Yeah, agree.
Okay, that's it for the show. Thanks a million for coming on, Philip.
Thanks a lot for having me. Was a big pleasure. And please feel free to come over. Like when you're in Berlin, there's always a beer at our office. So feel free to come by.
You said the magic word. Beer is my weakness. I am Irish after all.
You're welcome.
Cool. Thanks, Philip. Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain. Or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application to get new episodes right away as soon as they're published. And also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.